I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks a lot for joining us for today's podcast titled Coronavirus Facts Only. Every day around this time, I'm talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital about coronavirus and COVID-19. What do we need to know? How do we keep ourselves safe? And what lies ahead in the uncertain future? Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Always happy to.
We're hearing today that there's some new evidence, some new data that shows African Americans have contracted and died of coronavirus at an alarming rate. Here's the U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Jerome Adams.
I've shared myself personally that I have high blood pressure, that I have heart disease and spent a week in the ICU due to a heart condition, that I actually have asthma and I'm pre-diabetic. And so I represent that legacy of growing up poor and black in America, and I and many black Americans are at higher risk for COVID. It's why we need everyone to do their part to slow the spread.
What do you think of that, Dr. Buchholz? Is there some reason that African Americans seem to be more at risk?
Well, again, it's another one of these disturbing patterns that you really are, disappointed to see. And this is, I'm kind of at a loss for, again, the right word. It's not surprising in the fact that in the United States, there's a clear disparity in healthcare and healthcare outcomes for our African-American population versus the rest of the population in the United States, you know, and so their life expectancy is less. There's, you know, for the same chronic conditions as diabetes or heart disease, the outcomes are not as good as if they are for other aspects of the population. And it's really, as I've said many times in a lot of different talks, it's driven by zip code. You know, St. Louisans are fond of asking their high school question. What that really does is get somebody's locale down pretty accurately. It's the same thing for a zip code. If you give me somebody's zip code, I'll tell you exactly what their health outcomes are. And that's troubling. I mean, why in an area such as St. Louis is, you know, what, 67 square miles, how do we have such a wide disparity of outcomes just based on kind of these local geographic differences? And again, that plays out all across the country. And it's a huge problem. Just COVID, what it's done is basically expose all the flaws in our healthcare system and our social network and our safety net and just kind of ripped it apart and made them worse. And this is a perfect example of that. It's, just in the St. Louis region, that same fact is bearing fruit, you know, in northern St. Louis and north St. Louis County, we're seeing more cases and the mortality rate is a little bit higher just on the limited data we have already. And so I think I'm not surprised. It makes me ill to think about that there is this disparity and I think it's one of the great things we need to work on as a society after the fact and work on now while we're taking care of our patients is just, you know, making sure they get the best treatment possible, just like everybody else.
Another new study is out on expectant mothers and coronavirus. This one's in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. It found that most pregnant women with coronavirus do not experience more severe illness than other patients, and they also don't appear to pass the virus on to their babies. That would be good news, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. I think that's a big stress for any mother, expectant mother, that's going to look to have childbirth in the next couple of months, including some friends of mine, honestly. you know, yeah, I'm relieved to hear that. I don't think it makes me feel incredibly great in the sense that, you know, you don't have to be at lower risk to be that one that has a pretty severe outcome with this. And so it's certainly a concern, and, you know, but at least some good news in that regard that you know, there's not a much higher risk than others. But, you know, and then you certainly don't want the baby to get any kind of childhood or newborn illness right after birth. And so the fact that it doesn't seem to cross or, you know, even affect babies as they're being born is at least a positive sign, yes.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, I wanted to bring up some numbers that we heard in yesterday's press briefing from the St. Louis Metropolitan Task Force on Coronavirus and the pandemic. This is Dr. Alexander Garza.
Yesterday, we had 468 hospitalizations. Today, we have 545. ICU was 164, and today it's 224. And ventilators were 139 yesterday and 172 today. So as you can see, these numbers are increasing, which is what we expected. These are what our models have shown, that we are on the steep part of the curve right now. And according to our models, we will be going through our peak within the next 2 to 3 weeks. But again, how we get through these difficult times is really dependent upon us as a community and not necessarily as a healthcare system. Now, our current modeling shows, and I said this over the weekend, that we will most likely have around 80,000 people infected by the coronavirus at the end of April. Our modeling shows that this could result in anywhere from around 1,300 hospitalizations up to somewhere over 3,000 if we get into extremis. That upper number would put an extreme amount of pressure on the healthcare system, and it could overwhelm our ICU capacities and our ventilators. So the goal is to not get near that top number.
What do you think about those numbers?
I mean, they're you know, it's concerning. And again, I think he's absolutely right. I've nothing to comment on what he has to say. And the fact that, you know, this is what we've all been worried about. And, you know, I think this is why the measures we've taken over the last couple of weeks and that we need to continue to take are so important. But, you know, I definitely am feeling this in our own practice in my own institution, and just kind of that ratcheting up of pressure and, you know, the activation of our backup plans and everything in place that we have in place. But, you know, I think you'll certainly, if we get past the capacity, what are we going to do, and how this affects us as a, it's concerning. It's what we were all kind of afraid of and worried about. And, you know, I think it just makes me take a deep breath and say, okay, let's get ready. And you know, again, it kind of just says, you know, we're preparing as best we can, I think our community has a lot. We have a lot to get ready for and a lot to be worried about still. So we're certainly not out of the woods, and we're just getting started. And I think that you know, it's kind of use the analogy of, you know, I've been saying, you know, we're like the Titanic. We see the iceberg. And we know we can't avoid it. I think now we're getting if we haven't hit the iceberg yet, we're just about to hit the iceberg and bracing for that impact. That's kind of the sensation I get when I hear those numbers.
And it's not just the impact of patients, but there's also an impact on healthcare workers too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think it's just the fact of, you know, not only if you have 3,000 ICU patients, if that's the number they had, I don't know if that meant 3,000 patients or 3,000 ICU patients, but, you know, it's not just the physical space and the bed and the ventilator. It's the people to manage that, the respiratory therapists, the nurses, and the physicians to care for these patients. And, you know, where are we going to get that capacity? And, you know, I think that's as much a concerning thing as everything else.
And another call for continued social distancing, correct?
Oh, gosh, yes. Please do so. And, you know, I applaud that people are getting more and more active steps with this, and, you know, parks are closed, the grocery stores are allowing one person per household. You know, I certainly applaud all those things. I still hear reports of people going to restaurants and bars or places that are defying the order. You know, I think the next step is if we continue not to have this, is a more stringent enforcement of that. I mean, it's just until we can get testing in place and use that as a substitute, this social distancing right now is the best solution we have for our survival.
I wanted to ask you about some comments that Dr. Anthony Fauci made at the White House press briefing on Monday afternoon. He was asked, will we get back to normal, and what does normal look like?
Dr. Anthony Fauci says coronavirus won't cease to be a threat before there's a vaccine. He says until it's developed and in widespread use, life won't truly get back to normal.
I don't think that's going to happen until we do have a situation where you can completely protect the population.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Do you agree with Dr. Fauci?
You know, I'm not in a position to disagree with him. As I've said before, the man is infinitely smarter and wiser than I am. So I certainly agree. I don't know when we get back to normal. I think to kind of augment his point, I think at least testing and being able to test on a frequent basis is essential. I mean, that really to me is the first step. I certainly applaud the efforts to get a vaccine. I do wonder, you know, the one thing you see with things that are so virulent like this and spread so quickly is sometimes they do tend to peter out, and then, you know, a concept called herd immunity takes over. I don't know if that will happen or not. I think one thing we've learned, or we know from all this, is that, you know, any assumption here is really, you know, an optimistic assumption. Is it's not an error, just, you know, the wrong approach. I think plan for the worst and hope for the best has kind of been the consistent mantra. Vaccine development is not easy, and getting vaccines for this particular type of virus is I'm assuming not easy as well. So I'm not sure waiting for that to be the solution for our problems is the right approach, but I certainly would eliminate the threat. That's for sure. But I think, you know, I think the next phase, once we've separated everybody out, is, and what other countries have adopted that seems to be working, is aggressive testing. You know, you get a whiff of something, or, you know, you test all those people, you get a sense of where things are. You have an antibody test that tells you who's immune to this, and then you can start to sort out piles of people, basically. Maybe piles not the right word, but sort out groups of people that you have a good sense of where they stand and what the risk is, and then make more refined decisions. And that's where you start to get things back to normal. You know, if you have an antibody, you know you're immune more than likely. You can return back to work and not worry about getting sick, or you can, you know, go back to the healthcare workforce and not worry about getting others sick. You know, those are kind of the questions we have right now that we can't answer with any kind of precision whatsoever.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a slew care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, we heard over the past couple of days a tiger in the Bronx Zoo came down with coronavirus, and that strikes fear into the hearts of many people who own cats. What do you know about cats and coronavirus?
Well, and again, reading this particular story, I guess, and I didn't know this either, the large felines are of a different species and lineage than kind of a household domesticated cat. So I guess there is that question of, do they have the same makeup or ability to be infected by this virus? And nobody really knows. And, you know, I think the most important part here is, I think all this should be with a degree of uncertainty. Nobody really knows this answer in the first part. Well, I think the second part about this is, you know, that, certainly, you know, we now have what, over a million people infected with this that we know about, let alone probably the millions that have had this that we don't know about. As far as we know so far, cats have not been a major vector or means of how this virus is transmitted. And so I think the risk is altogether low. I would think we would have sussed that out at this point if it was higher than it is. I say that with a degree of latitude and uncertainty, in the sense that, you know, I don't think that's been established for certain. But, you know, certainly I think the biggest worry has been human-to-human transmission. And certainly when we've taken steps to reduce that, that's what's had the effect on reducing this virus, its spread and how many people get infected. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, but you know, you don't know. And I'm glad that they didn't use any human tests for this. I guess they developed their own tests, but I would rather that be used for a human than for a cat. But that's a different story. And again, I don't think you need to routinely get your cats tested at this point.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, I have a few more listener questions for you, beginning with this one that says, I wear vinyl or latex gloves to the grocery store. Once home, I walk over to the sink and wash my hands thoroughly with the gloves on, dry them, and then take them off. Doesn't this protect my hands while shopping?
Well, if you're using those gloves to say over and over again, I'm not so sure. And I don't know how much soap washing does for the integrity of the gloves. I mean, generally with gloves, we wash them off, or we take them off and then discard them. And so I have no expertise or knowledge of whether or not that's safe or not. And again, I think the same thing with, to me, gloves are like, they probably provide more psychological comfort than real comfort. That being said, again, touching and having contact with surfaces that may have this virus, and then again, touching your face is probably a mode of transmission. I think, as I've said multiple times, hand washing is essential here and thoroughly and frequently. I don't know if washing your gloves, I don't know if that maybe it washes off the COVID, but, with the damp area, does that cause other bacteria to spread? I don't know. The other thing, too, is if you have multiple sets of gloves, it's just leaving them out to dry. So you use them, maybe you wash them, maybe you don't, but you leave them hanging for a couple of days and then use another pair and just kind of cycle through pairs so that they're hanging out for 3 days. There is some evidence that leaving equipment out for 3 days will effectively kill most of the virus. So that is an option. I'm not saying I recommend it, but it's a possibility.
Another question from a listener. She says, I'm 70 years old. Do I need to stay inside all the time?
Well, I think getting out is good. I think what you need to be cognizant of is just, frequent contact with other individuals. So, my parents are in their 70s. They've been mostly at home. They've gone outside. I think them going for walks and keeping their distance from others is fine. Going for a drive or something like that, I think is not a bad thing. What you really want to do, the whole point of the social distancing is interactions with other human beings on a frequent and close basis. So, as long as you're taking steps to avoid that, I think being outside, particularly days like today, they're just going to be absolutely beautiful, I think is really, really important just for health, well-being, everything else, just for our own psyche. It probably helps more than anything, just get some fresh air and sunshine.
This listener wants to know, do you have any tips to stay safe if I have asthma?
Again, the same thing. Want to avoid at this time exposure with others with this, and the steps you do with that is social distancing and frequent hand washing. Those are I think concepts number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 all the way down to probably 20. And again, the issue with asthma is always particularly this time of the year is lots of different stuff are out that can be triggers for an asthmatic exacerbation. And again, I think it's just a sense of the calculus of when you seek medical attention and when you don't changes a little bit. Just know that if you go to a healthcare facility, there's a risk of being exposed to this. We're working like the devil to really minimize exposure to otherwise healthy people that we worry about putting at risk, but that's always there. And again, anywhere from 20 to 50% of people are asymptomatic, so you don't know who and who doesn't have this, and you want to avoid that as much as you can at this point. I think is kind of the key thing.
Another email from a listener says her spouse is considered an essential worker, so he has to go to work every day. What should she be doing when he comes home?
Yeah, it's an important question and a good question. And I think, in the healthcare world, that's a question a lot of us are facing, particularly when we have families. So I'll kind of say kind of the things that I'm planning on doing or will do when I, are due to when I go into work is, or even really go anywhere, is, you know, I have a change of clothes by the door. So when I get home, I immediately change. You know, I don't go in the house. I change, you know, in my garage, basically, from the clothes I wore to that facility into a fresh pair of clothes. Wash my hands immediately before I touch anything. Keep those clothes separate and wash them separately in hot water. I think if you know, you're around in close proximity to others and may not be wearing the right protective equipment, you know, you can think about being in a different area of the house, you know, so reducing contact even within the house, and that includes things such as meals. You know, I think that the extreme that you want to take in that kind of is dependent on the risk that you're facing in doing this. So, you know, again, so as an example is, you know, with, you know, when I cover the service and I'm home, I'm going to sleep away from my family, knowing I've worn my equipment during the day, but just for that day, just to stay away, just kind of give that kind of reassurance. And I don't know if, you know, on future days if I would do that or not. But if there's more of a question of exposure, somebody at work is sick, or you find out that they're sick, or they've tested positive, then, you know, I think that keeping a distance concept probably plays a stronger role. And it's hard to know. I think that's the hardest part with all this, is how do you really, you know, what's the line between reasonableness and being too cautious with this? And I think everybody's got to figure that out for themselves. And I think I'm still struggling with that a little bit myself. But, you know, I think push comes to shove, keeping that line and keeping that separation is probably more prudent right now, until we can kind of, again, figure out the testing and get more testing online so we can make better decisions about this.
Dr. Buckle, thanks a lot for your time. We'll always appreciate your honesty in talking with our listeners.
No, thank you. Appreciate being able to communicate. So thanks, Fred.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. This is KMOX health editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks so much for joining us for today's podcast, Coronavirus Facts Only. Talk to you again tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.